unfortunately, you're dropping out about half the time, so I really didn't get what you were saying. If you have the ability to crank up the power a bit or jiggle the antenna in a slightly different position and want to restate it, feel free.
Okay, I'll try again. I'm in the camp of infinity, but I'm going to add another twist. I think infinity is also in the infinite decimal, and that, you know, thinking of a definition of a point, you can just keep dividing and dividing, so infinity goes in both directions.
You're kind of touching on something that's called Zeno's paradox, in which he asks, if you keep dividing a line in half, can you do it forever? And does reality just kind of fall apart at one point? But we won't touch Zeno's paradox tonight. Let me tell you the answer to this portion. What George Cantor was able to figure out is that he used something called an index. In other words, he labeled each entry with its own unique number. You can choose the natural number line if you want, and arrange them in a certain order. The first ones, the square of the naturals, in just increasing. The naturals in increasing. The integers he did a little different with. He did 0, 1, minus 1, 2, minus 2, 3, minus 3, 4, minus 4, etc., etc. Below each of them, he indexed them with the natural numbers. So ultimately, they're all enumerated numbers that can be indexed with the natural number line. So the conclusion is that although all three of those sets are infinite, they're infinite in the same exact way. They're the same size, infinity, even though you would sort of think that the positive and negative numbers would be twice as big as all the just the positive numbers. It doesn't work out that way, according to set theory, using index and such. So they're enumerated numbers, and the number for that type of infinity, Cantor gave Aleph Naught as the answer. But here's part B. Now you have another box. In this one, you place the rational numbers. Now, these are numbers that can be expressed as fractions of whole numbers, like one-third or seven-tenths. In decimal form, some of these rational numbers can go on forever, like one-third in decimal form is written 0.3333, with all the threes going on forever and ever. But it's a finite number. It's not an infinite number. It just repeats itself. Now, the question is, how does this box's infinite set of rational numbers compare to the first three boxes I described? Is this infinity bigger than the other infinities?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Rich.
The answer is no. The infinity is exactly the same size as the other three boxes.
Okay, Rich, anyone else with any ideas on the subject?
Are you also including numbers that are rational but greater than 1? Go ahead.
I'm giving you all the rational numbers in the number line.
I will say no, WA2VDH, I will say no.
Exactly what does no mean? Because unfortunately, the way I tend to make the puzzle is either or. So it's the same size or the different size?
I would say the same size.
Anyone else with any sense before we pull the curtain down on this? This is a three act play, by the way. So we got one thing waiting for you. But anyone else who wants to comment about rational numbers? Very well. No one else wants to play, and you're all right. Rational numbers can be indexed as well. The order is sort of fascinating to me. He does 0, 1 over 1, 1 over 2, 2 over 2, 1 over 3, 2 over 3, 3 over 3, 1 over 4, 1 over 2 over 4, 3 over 4, and he just keeps on going endlessly. But he indexed them also with the natural numbers. So they're enumerated infinite numbers as well, and so the size is, again, Aleph Nort. Now here's the final act. In the final imaginary box for tonight, you have all the irrational numbers. Now, irrational numbers are numbers that cannot be defined by a fraction of whole numbers. They extend out into the horizon very much like my example that one-third did, but their digits don't repeat themselves. Now, the square root of 2 is a perfect example of an irrational number. A matter of fact, an ancient Greek philosopher offered a proof of the square root of 2 being an irrational number, and because Greeks really didn't like irrational numbers, they threw the poor guy into the ocean. Anyway, there are certain types of irrational numbers that cannot be described as a simple algebraic equation, like the square root of 2 can be. And they're called transcendental numbers, and the most famous that I can think of is the number pi. It's a perfect example for a transcendental number. So, for my very last imaginary box tonight, I describe it as filled with all the irrational numbers possible. Is this box's infinite number of elements the same infinity as the other boxes? Yes, sir. Rich.
Yes, 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 and yes.
Hey, Rich, I like your enthusiasm. Anyone else with any comments?
T2NBB.
Bob.
Boy, well, I read this, so maybe it's cheating, but the answer is no, it's bigger, and there's a proof, and I wish I could remember. It was beautiful, but I know you're going to come up with this, so I'll just leave it at that. Somebody else knows this better than I do. I can't remember too clearly. Something about the things not lining up. Never mind, I'll let you, in moving the stacks. Anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Bob, anyone else with any comments, suggestions, questions, answer, anything?
WA2BDHI, I would have to say that this would be a bigger set. That if you include the irrational numbers, it would have to be a bigger set.
Okay, very good. So we sort of got both answers already from people, but does anyone else have any comments to make about this particular puzzler tonight? Very well. The thing about the first three boxes is they're enumerated. They're indexable. You can actually arrange them in some kind of strategic order and label them with a incrementing index. You can't do that with irrational numbers. The difference between two different irrational numbers on your number line will give you an infinite number of irrational numbers between the two, and an infinite number of irrational numbers between the new one that you created between the two. And it goes on and on, very much like Zeno's paradox. So irrational numbers are not indexable, so their infinity is infinitely larger than the index, and it gets its own name of Aleph 1 as opposed to Aleph Nort. Keep in mind also that Alephs really work in mysterious ways. If you do simple arithmetic, Aleph Nort plus Aleph Nort, unfortunately, equals Aleph Nort. If you do multiplication, Aleph Nort times Aleph Nort equals Aleph Nort. So set theory is intriguing. Infinities are intriguing. It turns out, ultimately, that there are an infinite number of different infinities. Some sets exist in the same group, but you could always derive an infinity larger than the previous infinity. So that's my little take on infinity tonight. Any comments or questions?
Yeah, PDH with a question.
Yes, John.
If you considered points on a line, points on a plane, and then points, say, in a volume, would that be out of 0, 1, and 2? Go ahead.
I don't believe that that's exactly how they describe it in terms of geometry. It's, you know, set theory is one thing. You're kind of looking at it from a geometric point of view, which I'm not quite sure if that's what Cantor had in mind.
But you can't establish a one-to-one correspondence with, say, points on a line. Let's just say a finite line and then a plane of the same length and width. It would be impossible to establish a one-to-one correspondence with all the points on the line and then the points of the plane.
That's quite true, but I would assume if it kept the geometry, you would have plus north squared, maybe, because it's now instead of one dimensional, it's two dimensional, so it has a freedom in two dimensions. So that's a north zero times north zero, which unfortunately is still north zero. Not quite sure. As I said before, north one is enormously bigger than alpha one is much bigger than alpha north. Matter of fact, ultimately, if you look at numbers, almost all of the numbers possible are irrational numbers, even though we don't really think of that. I mean, because we hardly ever deal with, maybe we deal with pi a lot, but otherwise, you don't really deal with the square root of 2 that much. But just by set theory, it demonstrates that the overwhelming majority of all numbers available in our concept of numbers are irrational numbers.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I can just see just starting with decimal, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on. That would be an irrational number. Okay, this is a fascinating subject. Thank you.
Anyone else with any comments or questions? I must say, it was a pleasure doing this with you. I kind of thought I might get people just kind of looking cross-eyed at the radio and wondering what the hell's the matter with me, but I appreciate all the participation. But if you have any other questions or comments, now's the time. Your comment.
Yes, Roy. There's a book called Affinity by Brian Clegg. There are probably many other books that talk about this stuff. I think it's in here, that proof. And if I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong, but I think that proof, Alan Turing might have had something to do with that, too. Am I barking up the right tree? I'm talking about proving the irrational numbers, you know, being a far bigger infinity than the, like, rational numbers, et cetera.
Alan Turing was a brilliant mathematician. I think he came up a little bit too late for that. I think the proof for irrational numbers came from George Cantor himself, you know, something like 40 years, 50 years earlier. There are some great books on set theory. There are some very interesting, simplified books. I found a little book on, I think they call themselves the Graphic Book of Infinity, and it's a very lighthearted attempt at teaching people the underlying concepts. It's very enjoyable, and I'll probably pull a link and put it up someplace if you're interested. There are other books that will probably give some people migraines. There's one called The Road to Infinity, which is really heavy-duty math. So if you like your math, you can always go to things like Roads to Infinity. Otherwise, I'll put up the Graphic Book for Infinity, and it's a very quick read. It's a very small book, but it's an enjoyable quick read.
QNBB?
What's your question?
Just want to say, this book I'm talking about, it's kind of as easy as this stuff can be. It's a layman's book called A Brief History of Infinity, The Quest to Think the Unthinkable. And again, the author's name is Brian Clegg, C-L-E-G-G. I think he's English. Anyway, they talk about Cantor and all that in here, so it's probably one of a bunch of books. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Bob. Thank you for the recommendation. Always like to learn about more books. I'm going to burn out my eyes one of these days, but it'll be fun on the way. Anyone else with any questions or comments, or we'll do another topic?
222-RMI.
Yes, David.
Go listen to this, the subject. And it's very interesting. But my question is, wouldn't you think that infinity, according to these studies, is relative, you know? You have to compare it to something else before you can understand what it is. Go ahead.
Well, interesting philosophical question. Ultimately, what we've been talking about is that infinity is all relative in a way, that although a cursory thought about infinities would sort of lead you to believe that all infinities are the same size, infinite. The curious thing with something like set theory is the proofs that demonstrate that some infinities actually are smaller than other infinities, and there are an infinite number of different sizes of infinity. Which kind of gets confusing in a linguistic sort of way, but is sort of fascinating when you see the math.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't measure one infinity if you don't have the other one to compare it to.
Well, David, that's the whole point. The point is, if you're able to index the enumerated sets and they all have the same infinity, the fact that irrational numbers can't be indexed and therefore are larger than the indexed sets by comparison demonstrates that it's the same infinity, but it's an infinity that includes more elements in its set.
QSL, Roy, I tried to get the picture of this, you know, one infinity of an index number and one infinity of a rational number.
It's an irrational number. A rational number can also be indexed. It's the irrational numbers that cannot be indexed.
Well, rational numbers are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, while the irrational numbers are like fractions or some kind of whatever that isn't indexed.
No, David. Fractions are rational numbers. By definition, a rational number is a number which can be described as the fraction of a whole number divided by another whole number. So one-third, five-eighths, one and seven-fifths, whatever you want to do. Those are rational numbers. Irrational numbers cannot be defined by a fraction. Pi does not have a fraction. People use 22/7 as an approximation, but it's only an approximation. There is no simple equation, algebraic, in the case of transcendental, that will describe an irrational number. So that's the difference. It's not a fraction. Fractions are rational numbers. Rational numbers are less infinite than irrational numbers.
Think of rational as a ratio.
You said the square root of 2 is an irrational number.
Indeed, the square root of 2 is an algebraic, non-transcendental, irrational number. It goes on and on and on forever and ever and ever, and it doesn't repeat itself.
Yes, Alan, I was going to mention pi, but you got to it before me.
The pi is a very famous number. Another transcendental number that some people might be aware of is Euler's constant, E. That's a very well-known and very well-used transcendental irrational number as well.
H2NBB with a question.
Yes, Bob.
I don't think, maybe you said this, but I didn't catch it. What differs,
differs a transcendental irrational number from a non-transcendental irrational number?
Hey, Bob, a good question. I think I sort of answered it, maybe not directly. A transcendental irrational number does not have a simple algebraic solution. In other words, the square root of 2 is the square root of 2. It's very simple to explain to someone, even though the result is an irrational number. You cannot give me a simple algebraic equation that describes either Euler's constant or pi. What you can give me is an infinite series of steps that you take to the limit of infinity that approximates the value of pi. But there's no simple algebraic equation that you just plug it in and you get all the numbers of pi.
Well, it's not, that's just like saying, well, it's the ratio of a diameter to a circumference of a circle. That's not an algebraic expression, I guess. Back to you, Roy.
Exactly. That's not algebraic. That's geometric. Now, Greeks really loved geometry. This was one of their problems. They really didn't like fractions. They sort of used them, but they didn't like them that much. And again, irrational numbers just kind of drove them crazy. I mean, you know, when they found out that things like if you had a right triangle, where one side was one unit and the other side was the other unit, well, the hypotenuse is the square root of 2. And they're geometers. They want it to be in a nice geometric number, but it wasn't. It's the same unfortunate mentality as the saying goes, squaring the circle. Geometers in Greece always wanted to figure out a proof of how to put a circle in a square or a square in a circle. But the problem was always that the circle involved pi, which is an irrational number that they could deal with. So, that's that story.
Yeah, I remember Leonardo da Vinci was into that, too. I think trying to square the circle. I read that biography. I think the same one that you read. Back to you, Roy.
Roy 2H.
Lou, one sec. As I said, the Greeks were deeply into geometry. Algebra really didn't make it to the Western civilization until about 1,300 years. It was basically translated text from the Arabic. The guy who gives algebra its name wrote a classic book on the subject, and the numbers that the Arabs used in the algebra come from India originally. When they invaded and took over, they took some of their numbers along with them. It's a fascinating history, the history of mathematics and numbers. And Lou, you wanted to say something.
You blanked out. I think you turned it over to me.
You have it.
On the east end. All right. So, one third is rational, but it's an infinite series, 0.333333, and we know what the next digit is going to be 3. It's going to be a 3 because it's going to be 3. And I guess things like e and pi, we really don't know what the next one. I mean, we can compute out so far and then compute another one, and that's always a game. How many digits out can you go for pi? I don't know if it's escaping people or if this is overly simplistic, but the word rational stands for ratio, right? A fraction is a ratio of one to the other. Numerator to denominator. So ratio is rational. It's not that they're emotionally stable. It's that it's a ratio, and irrational cannot be expressed as a ratio. So there you go.
Lou, you are quite right. That is why it has nothing to do with psychology or emotions or intellect. It has only to do with the fact that rational numbers are described as ratios between whole numbers, and irrational numbers cannot be described as ratios between whole numbers.
All right. And again, I'm going to echo the other guy because I don't get to see it again. A transcendental number is the set of transcendental numbers. Are they all irrational? Are all irrational numbers transcendental? Or is there some difference I'm missing? And is it that as they go out, you can't predict the next one? Give me the transcendental definition again. I don't recall that anymore.
Okay, Lou. Within the realm of transit, of irrational numbers, numbers that cannot be described as ratios of whole numbers, there are kind of two groups. There is the kind of group that are called algebraic, which means that they are easily defined by an algebraic equation, like the square root of 2 defines the value of the square root of 2. You can't do that with pi, because pi does not have a simple algebraic equation that can be used to define itself. There are equations out there that are really problematic, that are sets of additions of terms. The farther you go out, the closer you get to the value, but it's an infinite path. But they do not have their own simple set algebraic equation that defines them. They have a ratio. You can say, as the geometer would say, what pi is in relation to a circumference versus a diameter. But that's not an algebraic equation, and that's what makes the difference between a algebraic irrational number and a transcendental irrational number.
Got it. Very good. And I guess you're referring to limits, when you can kind of converge upon a number, but you still never hit it exactly. Maybe those are limits. But okay, good. Thank you, NY2H.
Well, I was pretty much kind of hinting at the limit going to infinity, but I didn't want to trouble people with too much math tonight, since they were so nice to humor me with this one.
Very good. Good. Yeah, good participation. You got infinite participation from a bunch of rational people.
Is it alpha naught or alpha one?
If you want to continue, I mean, you didn't indicate alpha zero times alpha zero is alpha zero. Alpha zero plus alpha zero is alpha zero. You didn't say alpha zero times alpha one, which I assume is alpha zero.
A good question. I must admit, though, I didn't bother to look that particular thing up. My gut sense would be that an operation that included both alpha 1, alpha naught, and alpha 1 would end up being alpha 1, because aleph 1, rather, is infinitely larger infinity than aleph naught.
Summation operation, but not necessarily multiplicative, I would think, but that's my intuition. But okay. We'll save that for next week.
Hey, Lou, I will actually look it up. I hope I find it without finding too much of other stuff to bury my head into.
There, NY2H. Thanks.
Welcome, Lou. Thanks for participating. Anyone else with any questions or comments before I move on to the next story? Okay, though, this is an interesting one. The quality and speed at which videos can now be faked using neural networks and deep learning processes promises to make the upcoming presidential election even more of a nightmare. But by exploiting something overlooked in current deepfake techniques, researchers have found an automated way to spot fake videos. Deepfake videos are far from perfect right now. Created from giant libraries of images scraped from the internet, they're often generated at low resolution, which helps hide imperfections, and appear overly compressed. But the technology is improving at a startling rate, and flaws in the process, like deepfake videos that were easy to spot because the subjects never blinked, are quickly improved to make them more and more believable. It's a race that neither side is going to stand down from anytime soon, but researchers from the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Southern California believe they've developed the next weapon when it comes to battling, or simply just accurately identifying, faked videos. Using a similar process to how deepfakes are created by studying existing footage of the current crop of presidential hopefuls, they've trained an artificial intelligence to look for the presence of each person's soft biometric signature. Sounds a bit complicated, but when speaking, we all have subtle but unique ways that we move our bodies, our heads, our hands, our eyes, and even our lips. It's all done subconsciously. You don't really realize body is doing it, nor does your mind immediately recognize it when someone else is. But as a result, it's a detail that current deepfake processing technology don't take into account when creating a fake. Drop for 1 sec. In testing, the new artificial intelligence was able to accurately spot deepfakes at least 92% of the time, including videos created using several techniques and those with degraded images due to video files being overly compressed. The researchers plan to further improve the artificial intelligence success rate by taking into account the unique cadences and characteristics of a person's actual voice. But the reality is that deepfake techniques are evolving and improving at such a rate that they'll probably compensate and be able to fool this artificial intelligence before 2020 even arrives. This research represents a battle won, but the war for truth online is still going to be waged over time. Let me drop for any questions or comments. This is AC2GS.
VDH with a comment?
Yes, John.
Do they also include analyzing the audio as well as analyzing the video to try to determine the fake? Go ahead.
I believe that is one of the things that they're planning to tweak and add to the algorithm in its next go around, where they'll be picking up on because it's the voices, but they'll pick up on aberrations in the cadence of the voices.
I see. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm just thinking of that movie you might have remember from a few years ago called Looker, where they had computer-generated advertising models. Anyway, thanks.
It's sort of amazing how good this technology has grown over the last few years. I have seen people who have taken, movies. Occasionally, actors will pass on, but their characters still want to be... The producers still want them to appear in the movie, and so they have the CGI versions of these people. And you hit something called an uncanny valley. We have an innate ability to sense real human beings and not quite real. We don't even know why. We don't have a... It's not a conscious thing. You just look at an image of someone, and you say, there's something there. It's not quite right. So that's the uncanny valley. And they have redone some of these uncanny valleys. Their Star Wars uses them, Fast and Furious uses them, and they've used the deep fake versions, and they're even better than the CGI that Hollywood gave these films. So it's an incredible technology that's just asking to be misused. So I hope we figure a way out of this mess.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I was watching one of the committees on C-SPAN, and they had a whole topic on this, the audio and the videos of what they're making. And as a demonstration, you know, they had witnesses, you know, testifying all the different stuff that's going on. And the one guy had, you know, he showed a clip of himself transmitting from a computer. Now, he wasn't talking, but the computer was tied into the phone lines, and they had a big conversation and went on and on with his mother. And his mother really believed it was him the whole time. And at the end of the whole conversation, he told her, you know, he said it wasn't him. But, I mean, you know, you could fool your own parents.
Yeah, Paul, it's in some ways it's very, very scary stuff. Recently there was some a major politician in a minor East European country that kind of disappeared. No one's really seen or heard from him for for months, and then there was this recorded message that sounded like it came from him and sounded like it was recent, but the gestures were a little bit off, and everyone kind of thinks that it's basically a deep fake, and they don't know what the hell happened to that poor guy. But it's sort of amazing technology. You know, in the old days, your eyes don't lie, but nowadays, the science and technology and computers and neural networks, it's rather fascinating to learn how these deepfakes actually work. It gets into the very fabric of how artificial intelligence, it's not an algorithm. Some guy didn't sit down there and program these things. What happens is it runs through the images, it codes them, decodes them, and compares them with the original, then adjusts their own neural networking algorithms so that they have better resolution, and it's more like the original, and it's a self-learning program. So talk about brave people.
Yeah, that's what they showed on this C-SPAN. And they had an expert in AI, and he basically just said what you said. He, you know, without AI, they could never do this.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they now have applications. You can download them and run them on your personal computer. They have cloud-based software that you can just load the images you're interested in. They even supply you with a group of movie star images and, you know, give it a day or two, and it'll generate a video stream. So it's a curious time we live in. I am reminded of a Sean Connery movie from decades ago. I think it was Red Sun or something. Where part of it was that a murder was evidence was faked by a major company using very high tech to produce a fake a video record of the event. And you know, if you wait long enough, real people can do this. Any other questions or comments, or I'll move on to the next one. And this one. Fun. It has to do with UFOs. Three U.S. senators received a classified briefing on reported Navy encounters with unidentified flying objects. Politico reported this past Wednesday, including the vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Mark Warner. Quote, several current and former officials with direct knowledge of the briefings told Politico that the Capitol Hill briefing follows numerous others involving members of Congress assigned to the Intelligence, Armed Services, and Defense Appropriation panels and or their staff. A current intelligence officer told Politico that the more requests for briefings are coming in, while a former official said there are people coming out of the woodwork. The U.S. Navy recently acknowledged a number of reports of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft entering various military-controlled ranges and designated airspace in recent years, saying it has plans to overhaul the reporting procedures. While the Navy did not support the theories that the incidents are evidence of extraterrestrial life, far from it, it is effectively stating that said incidents need to be further investigated. Those notable incidents include a 2004 incident involving a guided missile cruiser that the New York Times reported had been tracking mysterious aircraft for weeks, with two F-A-18 pilots sent to investigate, reporting a sighting of an aircraft of some kind, whitish, that was around 40 feet long and oval in shape, hovering over the ocean. Another incident involved mysterious objects supposedly picked up on advanced radar systems by pilots flying off the USS Theodore Roosevelt in 2014 and 2015, with some of the incidents recorded on video. There is ample skepticism for these accounts, with potential explanations including drones, foreign military aircraft, equipment malfunctions, and or a mixture of all the above. Let me drop for a second. According to other reports by the Times, the Pentagon also spent $22 million from 2008 to 2011 on a shadowy program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. That project generated troves of reports, but little meaningful evidence that has sometimes been characterized as a pet project of former Senator Harry Reid. Earlier this year, Motherboard reported it funded bizarre research on topics like traversable wormholes, stargates, and negative energy, and warp drive, dark energy, and the manipulation of extra dimensions. However, the media reports do appear to have generated renewed interest from members of Congress, which Politico credits with pushing the Navy towards the policy shift surrounding UFOs. In response to requests for information from congressional members and staff, Navy officials have provided a series of briefings to senior naval intelligence officers, as well as aviators who reported hazards to aviation safety, Politico wrote. One individual who recently said he received a similar briefing is the president himself. For all the credibility that adds to any discussion, during a recent interview with Good Morning America, George Stephanopoulos, the president appeared bemused, saying he had attended a very brief meeting on the subject and confirmed that people are saying they're seeing UFOs, but he did not particularly believe it. Well, I think my our great pilots would know when some of them really see things that are a little bit different than in the past, Trump rambled on. So, we're going to see, but we'll watch it, and we're going to be the first to know. That's from our president. Anyway, let me drop for any questions or comments. This is AC2GS.
Here we are, boy.
Yes, Richie.
I wonder if they've ever or maybe now, reevaluating when that supposedly happened, Area 51 in, what is that, Roswell?
Yes, Roswell. To my knowledge, no. There are all kinds of intriguing, conflicting, confusing reports. I tend to be a little on the skeptical side, so I don't think little green men came down and gave us the cure for cancer or something. I think that it's kind of an area of the skunk works where the military test out all of their ultra-super-secret stuff, and it probably was a benefit to make people think that it was some kooky aliens rather than us working on some really secret technology that the Russians would like to steal.
I don't know, Roy. I'm very open-minded. And, of course, the likelihood that there's other life out there is very high. I don't believe we're the only planet in the whole cosmos as life on it, intelligent life. I think it's possible, maybe I got the wrong information. I understand they roped it off and they said it was a weather balloon, but there was radiation in the area. What do you know about that, boy?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, and neither are you. It is a military base, as far as I'm aware, and a research facility. They could have used some radioactive material. I agree in a way that I don't think it was a weather balloon, but I don't think it was a little green man. Again, my best surmise is that it was some kind of secret aircraft device, what have you, that got away from them, and then they had to cover up for it. Yes, I agree that a probability, statistics being what it is, there are trillions and trillions and trillions of Earth-like planets. There's probably life scattered all over the universe. The problem is the universe is a damn big place, and it's a big pain in the backside to get from one place to the other. So it'd be sort of like if there were, say there are three human beings. One lives here, another lives in the middle of China, and another one lives in, say, Africa. Chances are, and there's no infrastructure, chances are you're never going to hear from that guy. You're just too far away. Multiply that by a trillion, and, you know, we can't travel as fast as the speed of light, but light itself can take billions of years to get places. So I don't think any civilization has the forethought to start doing something that won't pay off for a billion years.
I think it's possible that maybe a highly advanced society might have broken the light barrier, and then they could get here. I don't know. But the likelihood is there are planets out there, some of which have intelligent life, that may have even surpassed us. You know, one time they thought the Earth was flat, and Columbus, I think even the Vikings before that, came out, and the people almost mutinied on Columbus's boat. So he proved the world is round. You know, sometimes popular thoughts are wrong.
Tricky. Sometimes popular thoughts are wrong, but you cannot base that so that everything that you believe is probably wrong, so the opposite is probably right. By the way, actually, educated Europeans in the time of Columbus knew the Earth was round. The Greeks pretty much calculated the circumference of the Earth 2,000 years ago. So that's kind of, that's a tale that everyone tells everyone else, that they thought that we were going to fall off the Earth or something because it was flat. But most educated people knew it was round. But again, you can't use that in reverse logic. And there are, as I said, trillions upon trillions upon trillions of possible planets. So the question is, if you had a faster-than-light device and one ship or 100 ships or a million ships, why the heck would you pick this particular planet? As far as the eye can see, if you're not within 150, say, light years of the planet, you won't even be receiving radio signals. So as far as you can see, it's just one planet like the trillions and trillions of others. So I think the law of averages kind of diminishes the chance of super intelligent little green men who somehow broke the speed limit of the speed of light and came to visit us. And I don't know exactly what they would hope to get from us if they're smart enough to break the speed of light.
That's a good point, Roy, but I don't know. Why would they come here? And, you know, attitudes and things change. At one time, they believed man could not fly. And when the Wright brothers built their plane, they laughed at them, you know?
I agree with you. There are errors. There are things that are not terribly well defined by science itself. That people were very concerned whether human beings could survive space, could survive zero gravity. There's a whole bunch of questions. They didn't really have anything to base it upon, but they had all those worries and concerns. But the same way, there are a lot of things that we think that have been proven again and again and again and again. So science has a lot of things right. I'm sure science has a couple things wrong, but you can't use that as a way of reversing everything in the other direction and just randomly deciding up is down and wet is dry.
Oh, I know, boy. I'm old enough to remember probably dating myself. Some of the early satellites, we launched a dog, and then we launched a monkey. So, you know, we got to, and we had cameras. And we certainly learned that man could survive zero gravity. Also, when the first nuclear bomb was dropped over Hiroshima, prior to that, people thought it
years, some people did and some people didn't. Again, if you want to farm for the fantastic, there are a lot of entries on the internet about CERN's Large Hadron Collider when they were looking for the guard particle. The Higgs boson. There were guys with a straight face suggesting that the energy required to produce a Higgs boson would produce a black hole that would engulf the world and end the world. So, you know, I mean, the thing is, most physicists just left. They read that, but it's still on some webpage someplace. So people have all kinds of curious ideas of how things work, and you can't be right all the time. And some of these things, most people who know better know it's not right, but it still gets mentioned around and remembered for history's sake.
Okay, boy. Well, I'm just tossing this around with you. It's interesting. I do believe in other worlds coming in. Mormon's 50s, Project Blue Book. With that, I'll let you go on to the next person. And to you.
Okay, Richie. I mean, you're free to dream these dreams, and you might be right, and I might be wrong. You know, we'll see as time goes on. Anyone else with any questions or comments before I roll this up for tonight? Very well. Again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, and I want to want to thank everyone for humoring me and following me on my journey to infinities. I had fun doing it, and I hope a lot of you had fun as well. If you have any questions or comments or topics that you would like me to delve into, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And the articles that I mentioned, reference, there's a nice little YouTube on infinities that some might find interesting, and I put up some links to track down information about the compact antenna that was discussed earlier. So just go to your web browser and type in roy.ac2gs.com, and you'll get the links for that as well. So I want to thank everyone who participated and everyone who listened, and thanks to Dick and Paul as always. I will now turn it over to Dick so he can turn it over to Paul to do the space report. Second thought, I guess I will hand it directly over to you, Paul.
Okay, very good. This is WS2N, and we had good weather this weekend. I spent a little time at the at field day yesterday, and that was very, very nice. They had like a half a dozen radios set up. I don't know if anybody listening has gone went there today, either today or yesterday, but it was very, very good. Let me drop it. Boy, I don't know if you made it over there, or I know you have you got another club too. I think you're involved with. So I don't know. Did you get a chance to get the field day?
No, I didn't, Paul. It's a little bit geographically limited to me. You know, being here in good old Brooklyn.
Excellent. Oh, okay. Kings County, don't they have it in Floyd Bennett Field or something? I heard another station, so let me just go back to you, Roy.
AC2LR.
Yes, Paul, the Kings County Radio Club does their field day in Floyd Bennett Field. Has been doing it at that place probably for at least 30 years.
Oh, okay, that's the one that John used to go to all the time. Very good. And I heard K, but then there was a station right before K, so I heard that station first, so let me pick him up.
Paul, this is WB2GXM, Rich. I was over at, I was over in Wontaw briefly for about a half hour. Very nice setup. They
lucked out this weekend. As I was not there to operate or to help set up or take down, I figured I shouldn't stay around, especially to consume their food, so I kind of left early. WB2GXM.
Very good, yeah. And, yeah, I got there. It was around 2:30 or so, right after it started. And my son-in-law drove, and brought my grandson. The first time he was there, so while he practiced, you know, I tried to get him to practice CWOP. So I had him send CQ and W2BL over there, and you know, for 20 meters. So we had a lot of fun. So yeah, I heard Kay, H2LR. Go ahead, Kay. This is WS21.
Paul, if you don't know, there's an amazing show right now on CNN on Channel 25, at least where I am in Westbury. It's Apollo 11, unseen footage and knowledge about the Apollo 11 launch. You can record it. I know we're doing the next, but I just wanted you to be aware of it because I don't see it repeating anytime after tonight. AC2LR.
Yeah, thanks for that, KK. I set the recorder about 4 or 5 days ago on that one.
Very good.
What I should have did is I should have mentioned it in the beginning of the net, and then anybody else could have hit their record button as well. I just thought maybe it was going to be just another one of these documentaries, you know, like you see on Smithsonian or... you know, something like that. But apparently, what you're saying is it's better than what we probably think.
Yeah, they're showing like live footage of Neil Armstrong getting dressed by some engineers right now, and all the stuff they're attaching to his suit. I don't understand how it looks so digital, like it's an updated video that was filmed this year. But anyway, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I heard they had pictures and film that was never seen before. So yeah, maybe they played around with the film to improve it. The actual pictures that came out, still pictures, and you know, in that era were perfect. When you saw them in Life magazine, they were just great. You know, the grainy black and white pictures from the television. You know, that's a different story, but the actual photographs were to me just perfect. Okay, this is WS1. Any comments, questions before I go on? Okay, and yeah, thanks for that, Kate. I will definitely look at that probably tomorrow. And there is a launch. We'll go back to 2019 here. Tomorrow night at 11:30. And you know, if anybody's up, if not, you could watch a replay either on NASA TV or definitely on the SpaceX webcast. Every time they have a launch, they'll leave the existing launch up until the next launch. You can always go back and look at it, but it's all a little late, 11:30 at night. And what they're doing is launching a Falcon Heavy rocket. Falcon Heavy is the biggest booster. In fact, it's the most powerful rocket that's on Earth at this time. You know, it's not up to Saturn V of the 7.5 million pound thrust category, but it's getting close. I think it's around 5.5 million pounds of thrust. And what it is three, you know, you take one Falcon 9 rocket, which is like the whole thing is 230 feet tall, but the booster, the main boost, is around 150 feet tall. You take three of those boosters and you bolt them together, and now you have 27 engines that are going to ignite at the exact same time, pushing the payload into orbit. They've done this two times before. Last year, February 6th, they launched the first one, and he put his Tesla car.